We
missed
Hello, Better
Rights.
Hey.
Hello, Tony.
Hi, Phil.
How are you, my friend?
Good. Tony, I missed your call yesterday. I'm glad to talk to you now, and I'm glad you called. I hear Tasso?
Yep.
Okay, we have some guests with us today, too. And Tammy, I'm sure you're here. Patrick is with us today. Yes? Hello, Patrick?
Yes. Yep, hello.
All right, so we got a full house. And Tasso, you are going to sit in a hot seat today. I'm apologizing. I'm pushing you back. But if you want to have a conversation this weekend, I'm more than happy to. Okay?
All right, sounds good.
Okay. Anybody who's a guest here, you're free to participate. You're free to jump in at any time. If you do, please say your name and where you're from, because we won't have any idea who you are if you just start talking. And if you're not talking to the guests, you can hit star 6, and that will mute you. And if you just want to sit back and listen, you're certainly welcome to. Right now, I want everybody here to think. And I know sometimes it's painful, especially on a Friday, but I'm going to ask you to give it your best shot. And I want you to think about something specific. I want you to think about the actions you've wanted to take, not the actions that you believe you're supposed to take, the actions you've wanted to take related to your business, your career, your growth. Actions that deep down you believe were in your best interest. And for whatever reason, you just haven't gotten to them yet. So take a moment and just think. I'm going to ask you to be introspective today. And I'm also, as we move through this call, going to ask you to simplify the list, to confront those things that you've wanted to do and haven't. And I want you to consider those actions and think about where you would be had you taken them, and just get a little bit of a glimmer of light, a little bit of what you've missed out on because you haven't taken those actions. And I'm also going to ask you to answer the question, or at least to consider the question, what is your calling? What is your calling? Now, if I'm going to do my job well today, I want to start with absolute clarity. So out of the gate, you know, I just said I'm going to ask you a question about calling. I want to make sure that you understand my intentions. I want to make sure you understand basically my heart and how it relates to this field that we're in. And I also want you to understand what I mean by calling. So I looked up the definition just about a minute ago. There are two definitions of calling. The first one is the characteristic cry of a female cat in heat. That's not the definition I'm referring to. The other one is a strong inner impulse toward a particular course of action, especially when accompanied by conviction of divine influence. I'm going to say it again. A strong inner impulse toward a particular course of action, especially when accompanied by conviction of divine influence. So nothing I speak of today will have anything to do with cats. So let's go back and review that first definition that I already shared twice, but I want to look a little closer at it. A strong inner impulse. Inner. This has nothing to do with what your parents or your colleagues or your friends or your boss told you to do. Although sometimes that, I guess, is how a divine message is delivered. Most of the time when we're talking about an inner impulse, it is fully from within. It's a feeling. It's a gut emotion or even an inner knowing. So your calling is a strong inner impulse toward a particular course of action, especially when accompanied by conviction of divine influence. Divine. As if there's some perfection greater than you that has influence over your consciousness, your psyche, maybe even your life experience. Now, in Eastern cultures, they refer to what I'm calling your calling as dharma. And although if you try to explore it, dharma has many different definitions depending on whether you consider the language and teachings of Buddhism or Hinduism or another Eastern culture, at its core, it means purpose. So the concept, according to Eastern cultures, is pretty simple. There is a God-given energy within you that from the moment of conception might represent the embryo of your fulfillment here on Earth. You come with this. And although we all contain this embryo of divinity, yours is unique to you. And along with that divine embryonic energy, you also have unique talents. And they begin to unfold in childhood. And at some point along the way, it's clear that you have a cluster of traits and abilities that in their sum total is unique to you. The third piece of this adventure, the first one being that embryonic energy, the second being your gifts and talents, the third piece is a desire to find fulfillment by making a difference, an inner want to serve. Now, I'm not asking you to accept Eastern teachings. I'm not really talking about religion. I'm asking you to consider that this belief has existed since mankind considered that there's a connection between human existence and a higher power. So whether or not you believe you came here with a purpose, you have to acknowledge that your life experiences, your upbringing, your inner strengths, and your desires are yours. And at a certain point, you develop a sense of where you feel best, or for some of you, where you feel most guided. Now, I believe some people are divinely guided to be mechanics, honestly. Not necessarily auto mechanics, but it's their specialty, it's their gift, it's what they do, they fix things. Others are divinely guided to be scientists. Some to be explorers, others to be nurturers. And without question, some of us were guided to be healers. I don't know that any healer I've ever met knew that they wanted to be a healer when they were 7 years old. I think somehow the inner embryonic energy meets with your talents and gifts, and then something happens in your life, and you suddenly feel connected to this path or this mission. Now, this can't be said of all doctors. Not all doctors are divinely guided to be healers. Nor can it be said of all personal trainers. Some are technicians. Some choose personal training because they love athletics and it's an easy path. That isn't a divine calling. It's just what they chose when they came to a career decision. Some choose it out of indoctrination. Their family, their surroundings, their father owned a health club. I'm suggesting, however, that in you can find what we might argue are divine nudgings, an inner push to pursue this path. And if you want to believe that we're born, we choose a career, and then we die, and that's all there is to it, then I have to say our beliefs differ in that regard. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying I believe differently. I believe there is something greater that, at least in my case, has led me here. I've seen enough people walk through tragedy or pain or suffering or chaos, and through that struggle, find their purpose. I've seen enough of that to believe that the process is not accidental. So I'm not asking you to accept my belief, and I promise you that's not what this call is about. I'm just asking you to consider it. Were you divinely guided to this path? Whatever your religious conviction, whatever your spiritual belief, was there something greater? Were you somehow destined to fall into this path? And if you open up to it in any way, then you have to believe that along the path, there are milestones or moments. There are moments of decision. There are moments of opportunity. There are moments of direction, of awareness, moments of emotion that we can look back upon and see how they steered us. I've been at this long enough where I've seen people come into the industry. I've met them because they came to me as an educator. They wanted to learn. And I've seen them move down a path that is just so intentional and so perfect for them. Whoever has conversation going on in the background, can you hit star 6, please? Star 6 is going to serve to mute you. So anyone who has background noise, just hit star six. And you can always unmute to participate. So if, in fact, we do have these moments and milestones, I would like to believe that today is one, that this call is not an accident, that I was inspired to cover this topic for a very good reason. Today, I'd like to believe, is a new beginning. All right, I'm going to mute everybody, and then you can hit star six to unmute. I'm going to introduce you to a concept today that I believe will change the way you look at what you do. But with that introduction, let's zero in a little bit on the concept of your calling. If what I'm saying resonates with you in any way, if this is, in a sense, the moment of your maturity, a time when you have enough life experience to examine the lessons, to look back over your shoulder and go, wow, I see how that served me, then everything you've done up until this point in time has led you right here. So the question is this in fact a moment like that? Is it a moment of recognition, a moment of awareness? Can you, in this moment, shift your consciousness away from postural analysis and high-intensity training and boot camp workouts and client sessions and movement patterns and all of the technical clutter that fights to come to the front of your awareness and identify where in the world this is leading you? You can choose in this moment to remain victimized by the mind clutter, the brain clutter. You can hold on to that mind chatter and let it be a distraction. Or you can confront the larger question, what are you supposed to do? And with that, what are you supposed to be? Is the answer a personal trainer? Well, if it is, then there has to be something more. Can you accept that there's a divine purpose in counting repetitions? I can't. I can't believe when I see a trainer in the gym going 12 more, 10 more, that trainer is in fact fulfilling a divine purpose, because I know that people can count backwards on their own. I've seen them do it. So to say my divine purpose is to be a personal trainer, that may be a first step, but man, there has to be more. Can you accept that there's a divine purpose in leading strangers through circuits of machines? I don't think so. I see personal trainers doing it every day. You know, I work out in a big box health club, and I see it. New members come in, the trainer has the clipboard, they walk them through the machines. Is that trainer fulfilling a divine purpose? Maybe. I just have to believe there's something greater. So are you different than those who make up the sea of personal trainers? Because if you say my divine purpose is to be a personal trainer, then you're just like them. I started out by saying we all have this embryonic energy, but we also have unique gifts, unique traits, and kind of this idea of purpose. So when you look around at the field of training, do you nod your head and go, yup, they're me? Or do you feel there's something more? I wonder if right now, and I don't want anybody to feel pressured, I wonder if anyone can articulate the answer to the question, what is your calling, or what was your calling? Can anybody take a shot at it? I muted everybody, so you have to hit star six. Is anybody willing to just take a shot, there's no right or wrong, at answering the question, what is your calling?
Hi, Phil, this is Anheuser.
Hello, Anheuser.
I feel as though my calling is to help people change the way they age, since it happened to me and I am doing it. So that's what I feel.
To change the way they age.
Yep.
Tell me what that means in terms of, without you, how would people age and how are you going to change it?
So what I do is I help people to have a shift in consciousness by giving them some information that they possibly didn't know about themselves. And that is so that they have this memory, a muscle memory bank, that they can go back into and reference like a filing cabinet and bring that awareness to the present moment and get out of the funk that they may be in as far as exercise or starting it is concerned. Because for me, I've been in the fitness industry for over 33 years, and I believe that that's not my demographic anymore. My demographic are people who hate exercise, who don't want to do it, who actually don't have anything to choose from, you know.
So you didn't know this was your calling 33 years ago?
No, but I did know that I loved doing exercise. And in fact, I'm very grateful that I was a teacher half that time, because I don't know if I'd have shown up for the classes if I wasn't.
Yeah. So was there a moment that you can kind of pick out where you go, hey, this was the life-shaping moment for me where I truly realized my purpose? Or was it just gradual all the way?
Yeah, there were actually quite a few moments like that, to be honest.
Can you share one?
One of them was spending about 4 years in a depression of my own making and coming out of it and realizing the amazing resilience of the human body and the deposit that I'd made in my personal muscle memory filing cabinet that I could access to get back on my horse again.
I'm curious, when you went through this depression, did you go to a doctor who told you you were depressed?
Yes, I actually went to quite a few that all told me that and put me on all kinds of medication that I've reacted very badly to.
So, Anne, I love that. I love that because you got to feel what it feels like to be a patient, and it's a shitty feeling. Am I right?
Yep, and I'm getting to feel like it's feels like to get old, because I'm going to be 58 next month and I'm really feeling better than ever. So, and doing things I've never done. So that's
okay. Well, let me first say this to you. 58 is very young. Take it from me.
Yeah. I do think so.
Okay. I'm sure of that, by the way. I'm positive. I know 58 years old is very young, but I want to go back to this idea that you found your purpose because you ended up on the other side of it, right?
Yep. Exactly.
That's so common. So the medical field gave you a label. You went for an examination of some sort. You spoke to a respected physician, and they told you, yes, you have depression. You are depressed. So there's the label. Anheuser is depressed. And if you were like most people, you walk out accepting the label. So, hello, I'm Anheuser. I'm depressed. From that point on, that's what you become. And they say, don't worry. You can be okay because we're going to give you medication. So you get the label and you get the medication. And as you know, most people live their lives with the labels they're given and the prescriptions that they're told they need to take. So something got you through that and brought you out the other side so that you could lead people away from that, correct?
Yes.
I love that. And it is so typical of when somebody finds their purpose. There's a struggle, there's some chaos, there's some something. It's not always severe, but there's always something that creates an inner strength within you, and you go, I see what I need to do. I understand what I need to do here. And it sounds to me like you're 1,000% clear.
Well,
I know mine.
Sometimes you do know what to do, but you still don't do it for a long time, and then you finally do.
And I'm really, really glad that you joined us. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for being candid and transparent. I know mine. I know my purpose clearly, and it's evolved. I wouldn't have said the same thing 10 years ago. My purpose is to help people from all walks of life gain power over their health. My purpose is to empower those with the heart to heal, find their place within the correction of a flawed medical system, and to know beyond all doubt that I used my gifts and blessings, even if they were disguised as hardships, to play my part in changing the world for the better. I don't need to be recognized for that, but I'm really clear on what my purpose is, and it's a part of why I'm talking to you today. So you might not have clarity in this moment as to what I called your dharma, or your calling, or your purpose, but know this. There's more to it than taking people through workouts. And if you're resisting this at any level, if you want for simplicity and you don't want the burden right now of trying to figure out what you're here for, realize that in the large scheme of things, there's a reason you're on this call today. I know One, two, three, four, five, six. Six people in the Be Better group have texted me or emailed me, say they can't be on the call, and I just want to extend this to them. You're going to be listening to the recording. There's a reason that you're hearing this right now. Maybe it's to force you to stretch beyond your prior limits. Maybe it is to exercise your prefrontal cortex where you can imagine a different future. Maybe it is to rise above the mediocrity of the field that we're immersed in. Maybe it's to see a brighter picture. Here's a different question to ponder, and I invite any of you to answer. What are two things in your life experience that you feel were growth experiences? Can you identify two moments, two experiences that you went through that you can now look back and go, wow, those really helped to shape me? Or can you even identify one? I'll put this out there for anyone to answer. Remember, star six to unmute. Can you think of a moment in time that might have been difficult or confusing, and now you look back and you go, I am so thankful for that because it moved me in the right direction. It gave me clarity. Okay, I'll raise my hand. Yes, Mr. Kaplan? Yeah, I have one. Okay, go ahead. Well, there are two. One is my Parkinson's diagnosis. Those of you who know me and those in the Be Better group, you know that I don't have Parkinson's. I don't have Parkinson's, thank God. But there was a moment in time where I was told I did. It was a misdiagnosis. The truth is I got sick from mold toxicity. Once it was correctly identified, I got well. But that was a moment for me because it brought me a different awareness, very much like Anne being told that she has something and she is something. I was, in a sense, told that I am a victim of a disease that is debilitating and is probably going to destroy my life. Was it true? No. But could it have been? Yes, if I believed it. If I accepted the diagnosis, I would have lived the rest of my life taking medications and believing I had Parkinson's. Instead, I'm talking to you. So what got me past that point? I think most people would have just stopped at the diagnosis and started going to doctors. I can't answer what got me past it. I have to believe at some level it was divine guidance. I needed to go through that experience because it nudged me in such a way that my career moved away from helping people get great abs and great glutes and start correcting some of the shortcomings in the medical field. The second was a lawsuit where I was in a legal battle with an infomercial company because I shot an infomercial. They edited it and, in my opinion, made it fraudulent. And we went to war. And it never actually went to court. They drained me financially. I had an attorney who was very expensive, and we kept having to answer subpoenas, and we had to go to court in Maine. And it just became an odyssey that was hugely expensive, and I wound up $250,000 in debt. I had never had debt before, and suddenly $250,000 in debt. What a horrible experience until it was a great one. Because on the other side of that, I was determined to earn back every penny. I refused to declare bankruptcy. And had I not been pushed to that brink, I don't think I would have learned what I'm capable of in terms of earning, because nobody told me that a personal trainer can earn over $300,000 a year. I'd never seen it. I had no evidence of that. I just knew I had to. So there's an example of two obstacles in my life that really turned out to be incredible blessings. By the way, if anybody along the way has a realization, we go, hey, wait, I have a moment. You know, I have a share it. Just interrupt me. Just in the last 2 days, I met people who found their purpose. A few people who found it completely different than the path they were on when they were younger. I spoke with Mary Furlong. She's 72 years old. Now, when you think of 72 years old, you're probably thinking of a relatively old lady, and you think I'm going to tell you that she exercised and got in shape. That's not the story here. Mary Furlong is incredible, bringing together opportunities in the world of baby boomers, not on a small scale. Her clients include United Health, AARP. I can go with a very long list of multi-billion dollar corporations. Back in 1986, having no idea where she was headed, she started her first company called SeniorNet. She was in her 40s at the time. She was an educator, a businesswoman, and she saw an unserved opportunity, what I've learned to call a blue ocean. Back then, technology was starting to explode, nothing like it is today, but it was beginning to, and seniors were out of the loop. They didn't know how to work a computer. They didn't know how to get on AOL. So she decided to build an organization to help seniors become computer savvy, to learn to tap into technology, even to form online communities. And through that, she attracted clients like IBM and Johnson & Johnson and Merrill Lynch and Pfizer and a whole lot of names you know. That led her to a place where she followed her unique path of experiences, and with the expertise she acquired, she now, at 72 years old, serves as the young president and CEO of Mary Furlong & Associates. You can look her up online. It is a far-reaching worldwide company that understands what is now the pot of gold, the baby boomer market. She's not an old lady doing a part-time thing. She is immersed in this. She's an expert in business development. She forms massive partnerships within the baby boomer marketplace. We met because Lisa Doherty of the Medical Fitness Network arranged a call, and what an amazing community Mary has created in forming alliances, partnerships, and in doing consulting for major players in the baby boomer market. She's raised, get ready for this, over $130 million in venture financing. That means people have visions. They go, I would love to do this thing for the baby boomer market, but I don't have money. So they could go on Shark Tank, or they could go join Mary Furlong's organization. She's raised over $130 million in venture financing, enabling visionaries to step into new realities. Now, I'm sharing this because my discussion with her was about, as you would expect, bringing healthcare companies and medical entities into the space where we can actually help people get well. You would think that healthcare companies help people get well. You would think that medical entities help people get well. They do in cases of acute injury. They do in cases of severe trauma. But in cases of chronic disease, they don't. They don't help people get well. Stay with me. I'm going to explore that further. So Mary created a company to bring these entities together. And that's what I'm talking to her about right now. It's what I continue to describe as the blue ocean between fitness and medicine. My circle of colleagues today includes quite a few doctors from varied disciplines, all of them understanding what I conceptualized as the positioning compass. It's an illustration, a diagram that I have that I share in conferences that help health professionals sort of align their direction. On one end, which would be the north of the compass, I have the collective, meaning you're part of a community. The south would be individual. Many people wind up too far on either extreme. They either wind up so deeply immersed in a collective that they really become a part of a cult, in a sense, where they can't think for themselves. They just follow the paradigm. And others go so far in the other direction that they're not paying attention to what other people know. They just become mercenary. You want to be in the middle. You want to be part of a collective, and you want to be individual. The east and west are the parasite and the empath. Some medical professionals become parasitic. They make their money by feeding off of people. and other medical professionals are so far to the other extreme that they treat people with emotion and care, and as a result, their patience and their work literally drains them. Now, I'm going to say most personal trainers I meet who really have a heart for helping people wind up deep in the empath zone. They're not getting rewarded as they should. So again, you want to be in the middle. You don't want to be the extreme empath where you lose, you sacrifice a piece of yourself, but you certainly don't want to be the parasite where it's costing others so you can benefit. So that's what I mean by the positioning compass. So all of the doctors who I've developed friendships with understand that. All of them want to be centered. All of them want to be connected to their inner passion to help others. Early this morning, I spoke with someone who is conducting the most innovative regenerative medicine conference in the nation. Regenerative medicine. Man, it is on. In the space of regenerative medicine, built primarily around the research and discoveries related to stem cells, you'll see a lot of parasites emerging. Now that people can use the virtues of stem cell research to market, I've already seen a great many taking advantage of people, promising that stem cell therapy is the answer, charging insane amounts of money, I would have to say, performing treatments that have no hope of getting people well. That's what happens when an opportunity shows up. So in this realm of regenerative medicine, you see a lot of parasites emerging. I can say the same thing about medical marijuana and cannabis. There are lots of people who jumped in it for the money, and man, are they making money. Because these fields are not yet mature fields of specialty, there's opportunity to be parasitic. But in my circle, and in line with the person I spoke to this morning, those who have a true heart to heal are stepping into their positions, utilizing what science is revealing for the greater good, not only for personal gain. So from where I sit, I can say I see change happening. I see the world going through a change. And that change is opportunity for those who are willing to see it. So do you see it? Do you see the opportunity here? Listen, fitness is good. There's nobody who's going to argue that. If I make that statement, fitness is good. You know, put me on Dr. Phil, and he goes, all right, we have a guest who has a controversial statement. I go, fitness is good. Nobody will challenge that. Everybody goes, yeah, fitness is good. So if you want to be mediocre and you want to sell fitness, good. It's good. Nobody's going to criticize you. Anheuser has a different vision. She thinks fitness is good, but what about the people who hate exercise? What are they going to do? Who's going to help them? So, okay, fitness is good, but aging healthfully is better because there's a market that needs help. She sees a blue ocean. Prevention is good. You know, wellness is good. These things are good. But reversing disease is better. If we can help our population age healthfully, and in that, if we can reverse disease wherever we can, then there's no question that we're not only doing something great, we're serving a greater good. The question is, are you divinely guided to become a pioneer? Is this resonating with you? Are you going to step into this world? You don't have to, but I want you to be aware the movement is happening with or without you. I've been talking about it and moving things forward now for over 10 years. But there are shifts that are going to fill this still empty space with parasites and empaths and collectives and individuals, all with their hands out, hoping to grab a piece of the pie. The pie is still whole. Nobody's grabbed a big piece yet. There's a big piece for you to grab. If there's an underlying reason for my focus on today's call, it's this. The blue ocean is still blue. if helping masses of people rediscover health, if rescuing people from anonymity and misdirection in the big, ugly world of hospitals and doctors and medication is a part of your personal calling, you cannot sit on it any longer. The opportunity isn't going away, but it's never been as shiny as it is right now. A blue ocean eventually turns red because lots of sharks jump in the water and they start feeding. Most personal trainers are misinformed. They won't have access initially to what I'm going to share with you today. So in that, not only are you going to evaluate whether this opportunity resonates with you, but you're also going to evaluate, do you want to take the steps necessary to really capitalize on this? I want to pause for a moment in case anyone wants to share either a thought or a comment related to anything I spoke about or express any level of insight or clarity related to your personal purpose or your dharma or your calling. Anybody, star six, you can share anything you want, open forum if you want it. Silence suggests what? We're intrigued, we're bored, we don't understand. Anybody want to share at least a little bit of insight at this point?
Hassan, I don't want to take up all the cool, but I just want to say that it's really exciting to be part of this new and upcoming industry. I also do frequency therapy, which is something else that, you know, is complementary to everything else that I do. So.
You mean vibrational, or you mean like you show up really often?
That would be even better. But no, grade 10 unit pretty much is what it is, and we're getting
involved
with the chiropractor with it. So,
okay. And by the way, Ann, you don't need to apologize for being the vocal one on this call because they're all enabling you. Just realize that. They're enablers.
Okay. All right.
They're saying, we don't want to speak, so Ann has to. So thank you for that. Anybody else? Anyone who's not Ann want to share anything at all? Okay, I'll keep going then. For now, the great majority of people who hear my message will be personal trainers. And I think most people, if not everyone on this call, falls into that category. Or as some of us like to call ourselves, fitness professionals. While my voice will likely reach about 400 or 500 trainers within the next 10 days with this message, most of the 400,000 plus trainers will not be exposed to this message. So here's the sad reality and also the opportunity. I told you that most personal trainers are underinformed, misinformed, misdirected. I don't blame them any more than I blame medical professionals who operate within a flawed paradigm. They're doing what they were taught to do. But most personal trainers believe they know how to help the market of unwell people. They don't know that they don't. That's not arrogant on my part. That's what I witness every single day. Most personal trainers believe that their conventional training, everything they've learned in the basics of resistance training and baseline physiology and macronutrition, will allow this unwell market to solve the problems. They believe that doing resistance training and aerobic exercise and figuring out a percentage of proteins and fats and carbohydrates will help individuals who have already crossed the line of chronic disease to get fit and healthy. And many of these individuals appear outwardly healthy. Maybe they're a little overweight, but they don't appear to be sick. But they struggle with chronic disease or they struggle with weight loss resistance. And I'm telling you this, most trainers don't know how to reverse it. Not because they're bad trainers, because there was no resource for them to learn that this is a different population. They aren't doing anything wrong. They just don't know what they don't know. So if you want to be different, you've got to separate. Here are two examples of what trainers don't know they don't know. First, when someone has the condition that I call restrictive endocrine maladaptive adrenal stress syndrome, REMAS, and by the way, 65% of our adult population has that condition. When someone has REMAS, they will not respond to conventional exercise strategies for fat loss. Insulin receptors are blocked. That's why they have insulin resistance. Glucagon production is limited. Glucagon is the hormone that releases fat. And neuropeptides and intracellular compounds work to inhibit fat release. So even if they follow the trainer's plan, they're not going to see the outcome, and the trainer doesn't know that. So the trainer blames the client. I'm sure she's not eating the way she says she is. I'm sure she's not doing the workouts on her own. She probably is. She just has a condition that your industry never taught you to deal with. I said I was going to give you two examples of what trainers don't know they don't know. Here's a second. Restriction in calories and exercise beyond the capacity for parasympathetic recovery, meaning train hard, eat less, that will increase adrenal stress and ultimately lead to amplification of the biochemical challenge. In other words, while they might lose some weight on the scale in the short term, they will wind up worse off simply because they're following the trainer's prescription. There's a Facebook group, an online Facebook community that has quite a few people in there, thousands. And I joined it some time ago because I was promoting my metabolic reboot seminar. And I did get a whole lot of people to attend from that group. But I very soon after just said I'm never going into that group again because it frustrates me. But I do still periodically get posts from that group on my Facebook feed, and I don't reply to any of them. The group is deluded, misled, and while sometimes I feel like I need to go in there and help people, I also realize it isn't my place to come in as a maverick claiming to be the new sheriff in town. It isn't my group. So Tuesday of this week, a post caught my attention. It was a woman expressing frustration and the waning of her determination. She kind of felt like she's losing her will. She's doing it, but she's kind of falling off, and she wants some advice before she does. Here's what she said. I'll read it to you. I'm exercising every day, 15 minutes of weights, 45 minutes of cardio. I stopped eating sugar. I only eat 1,200 calories a day. I lost 4 pounds and then gained back 2. I don't want to give up, but it's been 6 weeks and I'm getting discouraged. Any advice? So here's a woman who's really trying. She's frustrated enough to come clean and put this post up in front of strangers in the hope that they can help her. I'm exercising every day, 15 minutes of weights, 45 minutes of cardio, stopped eating sugar. I only eat 1,200 calories a day. You have to understand why she's frustrated. It appears, based on common information, that she's doing everything right. So the answers came in a flurry. They came out of the woodwork. I would say the words, any advice in that group, are the words that summon the vultures. Because several hundred personal trainers are members of the group. You know, they joined probably initially for the same reason I did. They thought they could get some business out of it. It's not my environment. I chose to stop. But they see opportunity. So between those trainers and the group members who are also suffering with the same struggle as this woman, there were over 120 advice posts, answers, over 120. One said, write down your calories. That's what I have all my weight loss clients do. Keep a food journal, and if you aren't losing weight on 1,200, you have to cut down to 1,000. I can't call it bad advice because it's what the trainer learned. 3,500 calories equals a pound of body fat. We all learn this. So that's the first bit of advice. Write down your calories. That's what I have all my weight loss clients do, keep a food journal. And if you aren't losing weight on 1,200, you have to cut down to 1,000. Okay, another said, it's all about the macros. What is your percentage of protein to carbs and protein to fat? Now, two posts down from that said, I know everyone says not to eat carbs, but vegetables are carbs. My nutritionist has me eating 64% carbs. I don't eat sugar, but mostly carbs. And she included a link to an article that was titled, 8 Reasons Carbs Help You Lose Weight. Now, keep in mind, there were 120 responses. I'm reading you a handful. Another post said, do more weight training. 15 minutes isn't enough. You have to build muscle first or you can't burn fat. At this point, I'm sure you're getting a sense of why I stay away from the group. It frustrates me. There's a lot of noise, most of it likely well-intentioned, but try to put yourself in the position of this woman. She's asking for advice and getting a whole lot of conflicting chatter. I want to share just a few more of the posts because I'm looking at them now as I'm speaking to you. Here's another one. Run. I used to do cardio on the treadmill and I didn't lose weight, so I started running. At first, I could barely run half a block, but I'm now up to 2 miles and I lost 20 pounds. Nothing else works for me, just running. Here's another. Weight training is the key to this. I'm only laughing because how can this woman possibly go through this advice and get any value? And as I said, most of it, I think, is well-intentioned. Weight training is the key to this. Forget the cardio until you've built muscle. My clients lift for an hour 4 days a week and focus on proteins. Carbs make you fat. Protein makes you stronger. Oh, and it goes on. You know that. It's basic. But are you doing it? Private message me, and we can set up a distance session and get you a weight training routine that works. I'll give you one more, the last one. Try a water fast. It's the best way to change your metabolism. After the fast, start with only raw foods and juices, and as you lose weight, that's one of my peeves, I don't know why that bothers me so much, but as you, L-O-O-S-E, as you lose weight, you can start to reintroduce food. Now, this poor woman, she was much better off before she asked the community for help. In her mind, she's doing it all right and failing. And unfortunately, she's representative of someone who's being targeted by vultures, parasites. What I didn't read you, what I skipped over, were all of the pitches for direct marketing products. And I'd say those make up about half the posts, if not more. So put yourself in her place. You ask for advice and you get it. Here's the outcome. Run, don't lift weight. Lift weight, don't run. Right? If you read through these, that's where you end. Okay, I got it. I have to run and not lift weights, and I have to lift weights and don't worry about cardio, and I have to eat carbs, but I don't eat carbs, and I have to eat more, but I have to eat less. I had a conversation with Tony Berland from the MedFit Network yesterday, and I referred to the two ends of our industry when it comes to money-making. On one end, you have the trainers immersed in excellence. They're educated, they're well-tested, they're credentialed, and they're earning money because they're doing what they were intended to do. That is, unfortunately, a tiny percentage of our field. If we use a reported $75,000 annual earning factor to determine how small a slice of the pie that is, it's less than 4%. That means 96% are making less than $75,000. On the other end of the spectrum, we have, I'll call them the new earners, mostly millennials, although certainly not only millennials. They've invested time and money and energy in learning to market through social media, and they've mastered the art of stimulating impulse. They learn to create clicks, they learn to structure funnels, and they learn to capture what they call high-ticket clients. Here's the unfortunate part. While I don't pretend to speak for all of them, I'm sure some of them are very talented and very competent, I've seen many who are not, I've seen many who are not credentialed, have no proven competence, and have offerings that have very little ability to truly deliver results, but they're making a lot of money. Now, while some of these opportunists may be, in fact, adept at helping the fit get leaner or the near fit get fitter, I haven't yet seen expertise in helping the unwell market. I haven't seen any expertise among these new earners in helping the great majority of those who make up the vulnerable marketplace overcome their challenges. So we need to meet in the middle. We need to know how to market, and we need to know how to deliver, both. So many times in my career, I was asked the question in an interview, you know, what's the best advice you can give personal trainers? And I think the oldest advice is the best advice. Treat every personal training client as the most important person in the world. Stay committed both to the journey and to the outcome, and deliver more value than people expect. So I'm saying to the Be Better trainers, because we do have some guests here, let's do a mass guinea pig promotion. I want that woman from the group, not her personally, but she represents a large segment of the population. She's an avatar. What do you guys think about getting 10 of her? I'm asking Troy, I'm asking Tammy, I'm asking Gary, I'm asking Jim. What do you guys think about getting 10 of her and collectively holding them up in a Facebook group, putting them through the metabolic reboot, assigning each one of them a coach, and this becomes the primer for the national slim down that we will conduct? What if we all market within our universe and we all share the testimony? I keep telling you of the blue ocean and the opportunity, but today I want to break it down further. I want you to assess whether you have the right stuff to act as a force of change, a catalyst, a pioneer, and also if you have the desire. All of that led me to this point where I can say I'm finished with my introduction. I want to tell you what's going on and where the opportunity lies. I'm going to share a term that, whether or not you've heard, underscores the next initiative in medicine. And while at first glimpse you're going to want to applaud, you're going to go, yes, I love this initiative, we have to confront a larger reality than simply holding up a concept and viewing it as a bright light. The term is value-based healthcare. Has anybody heard that term? If you haven't, you will. Value-based healthcare. Now, the fact that this is an initiative has to suggest that value in healthcare is lacking, right? Nobody would have to suggest value-based healthcare if there was already value in healthcare. So the fact that there is this initiative suggests that there's a major problem. Value-based healthcare is a healthcare delivery model in which providers, including hospitals and doctors, are paid based on patient outcomes. If the patient gets well, the doctor gets paid more. Now, if the patient doesn't get well, I don't want to say there's a penalty, but the view of value-based healthcare is there wasn't a whole lot of value. The intention is to undo the knots of the present system, which is fee-for-service. Right? The way the healthcare system, medical field exists today, an MRI costs X number of dollars regardless of your condition, regardless of how sick or well you are. The MRI costs X. A CAT scan costs Y. A surgical procedure costs Z. Regardless of the outcome. So let's be honest. Lots of people, parasites, are making lots of money in the current system. But the flaws are vast and the potential for abuses are extreme. If we hold up a microscope, we can see where a system in which insurance companies pay pennies on a dollar can only escalate what providers charge. If a provider needs to get paid $100 and the insurance company pays 50% of the billing, then they have to charge $200 for something that really costs $100. if over time the insurance company drops to a place where they pay 25% of the billing, nothing's changed in the delivery of the service, but now the physician has to charge $400 to get paid $100. Well, in many cases, insurance companies pay literal pennies on the dollar. So lots of people are making lots of money, and the system supports it. This system, if it continues, can only create unreasonable expenses for anyone who is asked to pay out of pocket. They're going to pay 10 times what the physician needs to collect. We can also see the opportunity for aggressive business people in the medical field to drive profits by, as is common practice, directing patients to more tests, more procedures, more scans, more treatments, collecting more money from insurance companies. The sicker people get, the greater their costs. Understand this. The sicker people get, the greater their costs. So the sicker people get, the greater profits can be made at their expense. So value-based medicine seems like a really good idea. The sicker people get, the greater the costs. So the sicker people get, the less ability they have to even pay. So now what happens? Well, this creates a gap between what the hospitals bill and what the hospitals collect because people can't afford to pay. So the hospitals raise their rates. It trickles down to impact patients and doctors and, most importantly, quality of care. It's not even about the patient anymore. It's about the dollars. Let's try to turn it into people. Imagine if one person, I'll say a 48-year-old man, receives his initial diagnosis based on labs of diabetes. Okay, one man is diagnosed with diabetes. In the present system, drugs and tests and monitoring and more drugs and more tests and continued escalation of the disease become the pathway because the drugs don't cure the disease. There isn't any consideration of cure. From the moment he is diagnosed, he is in the system, and he is an ability for the provider to make money. More drugs, more tests, more monitoring. Because the drug doesn't cure the disease, there's no hope of this curing him. None. Over time, this only increases costs. And let's say 20 years later, now 68 years old, the same man is submitting surgical bills, home health care applications, disability requests, now trying to survive. Now I want you to multiply that by 100 million, not because I picked that number at random, because according to the CDC, over 100 million Americans have diabetes or prediabetes. That's the gold mine for the drug companies. You create metformin, you create glucophage, you have 100 million customers. 100 million! In fact, we're seeing trending that now shows that over 10% of the American population is living with a diabetic condition. So if the focus isn't on cure, if the focus is on medication, then the money's in the medicine. There's no initiative, there's no incentive for anyone to cure the disease. Gold mine for drug companies, no doubt, but if the drugs were curative, if they were, would the numbers continue to escalate? Of course not. So the message is almost, listen, Mr. 48-year-old man, don't worry if you have the condition, there's a drug for it. No, we're not going to get you well, and over the next 20 years, you're going to spend a fortune, but there's a drug for it. So back to my point. The existing system of fee per services isn't going to suddenly become a solution. It's only going to get worse. At best, we can call the present system inefficient, uncoordinated, and even when you shine the best light possible on it, we'd have to call it a complete failure in terms of getting people with reversible chronic disease well. I just said something that should strike a chord. A complete failure in terms of getting people with reversible chronic disease as well. If the diseases are reversible, it's criminal that people aren't getting well. My entire career these days is aimed at getting people with reversible chronic disease well. And I am a personal trainer. It's what I do now. I get people with reversible chronic disease well. 10 o'clock this morning, I did a consultation with Ken. He's the 48-year-old man I'm talking about. We're going to reverse his condition. He's not going down that path of fee per service. He paid this morning to get on a program of mine and work with the medical team I'm affiliated with. You know how much he paid? $1,200. To me, a personal trainer. Is that expensive? No, not if we cure the disease. I know I'm not supposed to say we cure disease, but listen, if somebody shows up and they have a blood sugar of 136, and that's the marker with which they diagnose type 2 diabetes, and 8 weeks from now his blood sugar is 98, and I'm predicting based on experience, then clearly he no longer has the marker, so he no longer has the disease. I will never take actual responsibility for curing the disease, but if cure means restore to health, haven't we restored him to health? So is it worth $1,200 to this patient? Insurance doesn't cover it, to not have to go through 20 years of debilitation and suffering. There's nothing I'm doing that you can't do. My programs run up to $6,500, all with a money-back guarantee. Where the system fails, and I'm telling you it's failing massively, you can succeed. The bigger question is, does that fact, the fact that you can rescue people failed by the overriding system, does that tie into your dharma, to your purpose? Only you can answer that. All right, let me go on. I shared some of the pitfalls of fee-for-service care. Now I'll outline the purported beauty of value-based care. In a system where insurance and providers are committed to operate under agreements, where providers are rewarded for helping patients improve their health, it seems the incentive would no longer be to sell services. Remember, fee for service is the existing system. Value-based service is the initiative. It's the proposed solution. Doctors will be rewarded for getting people well, not rewarded for keeping them sick. Initially, we'd want to applaud that. It makes sense that we would applaud it because the patients would be prompted to live healthier lives in an evidence-based way. The doctors, the providers, would be incentivized to reduce the effects of the disease and the incidence of the disease. The value in value-based healthcare is derived from measuring the outcome. The insurance companies would have to weigh the outcome against the cost of delivering the outcome. So the question would be for the insurance companies, is the treatment worth it? And the answer would have to be yes, if the treatment actually reverses or eradicates the disease. Are you with me? Does that make sense? If there were a system where the insurance company could pay for a limited period of time because the patient's going to get well, it sounds like a perfect system. Let's go back to that 48-year-old diabetic. If rather than pursuing a path of medication, he were entered into an exercise, nutrition, and mindset intervention, if his progress was monitored not by using labs to prescribe meds, but rather to assess disease reversal, theoretically, he could be free of meds, free of need for treatment, and remain a productive member of the workforce for the same 20 years that, in the other scenario, ran up hundreds of thousands of dollars in medical bills. if we consider the virtues of value-based care, advocates for it can make a very strong argument for its implementation. You will hear about this. You will hear about this in the government. You'll hear about this in the news, value-based care initiative. I'm going to share with you an excerpt from an article in the New England Journal of Medicine. It's a graphic, but I'll tell you what it says. It says, value-based healthcare benefits, patients, lower costs, and better outcomes. Makes sense. If the doctors are rewarded for getting the patient well, the patient pays for a much shorter period of time than they would if they had extended disease, so the outcomes are better. The providers, they benefit because they have higher patient satisfaction and better care efficiencies. The payers would benefit because there's a stronger control on cost and a greater reduction of risk. And society would benefit because there's reduced healthcare spending and better overall health. That's from the New England Journal of Medicine. Okay, so how do you fit in? Let's look at some other realities of the value-based model. The existing medical paradigm does not have effective strategies in place for disease reversal. As crazy as this sounds, the big bad medical system does not have a protocol for reversing disease. They have protocols for managing conditions, for medicating people, for diagnosing, but they do not have a paradigm. They do not have effective strategies for disease reversal. So to make the shift to value-based care, where disease reversal becomes the goal, it will cost hundreds of millions of dollars in education at a practitioner level alone. You can't just make the switch and suddenly doctors get people well. I don't want to say they don't know how, but they don't know how. Together with Lisa Doherty, I had a conversation with someone who works in partnership with the CDC to allocate grants and funds to address the diabetes concern. Their programs funnel money into education, but here's what's really interesting, who they educate. They don't educate practitioners. They don't educate fitness professionals. They educate people, just people. People who are willing to run programs teaching people the lifestyle basics of diabetes prevention. Lots of grants go to lots of states for lots of millions to teach people how to teach people diabetes prevention. How the fuck is that going to cure diabetes? I'm sorry, but you have to look at this and go, man, there are so many smart people. I don't pretend to be smarter than them, but it is so clear that the system itself is flawed. Intentions are probably good. But educating people in the lifestyle basics of prevention isn't cure. It's prevention. The problem is escalating, and even at the highest levels, cure is elusive. So go back to what I told you earlier. In my microcosm, I am reversing chronic conditions of hypothyroidism, hypertension, weight loss resistance, metabolic syndrome, and type 2 diabetes daily. And you can too. I'm not trying to sell you something, by the way. Honestly, I'm sharing this with you because the opportunity sits in front of you, and man, I want you to see it. The value-based initiative, as good as it sounds, simply cannot work in the short term because the medical paradigms are built upon the flawed system they presently operate in. And trying to make a shift, when we look at where organizations are trying to implement this value-based system, it is placing an extreme burden upon physicians and hospitals and providers and administrators. Medical offices are already burdened by the extremes of administration and billing. For this shift to take place, they would have to add in variable costs and variable measures related to actual outcomes. In other words, the insurance companies will assess what they pay based on the outcomes, which means more monitoring, more recording, more administration. Here's a statistic that demonstrates that I'm not just pulling imaginary barriers out of thin air. A 2016 study published in the journal Health Affairs said, you know, wait a minute, let me just grab it. I have it in front of me. Okay, I'm going to read it to you. U.S. physician practices spend more than $15.4 billion annually to report quality measures each year. U.S. physician practices in four common specialties spend on average 785 hours per physician. 785 hours the doctor must allocate to administrative work just to report what must be reported now for the existing system. Now imagine if a value-based system was suddenly put in place and those same doctors had to now assess the impact of medical treatments on restoration of health. That would take this already massive burden administratively and send it into another dimension. So it really sounds good that there'll be a value-based system, but man, it's not going to be easy and it's not going to be quick. Imagine if you owned a medical practice with all of the administrative challenges that are part of the insurance-based model, and you attached to a method of health restoration that allowed your patients to get well. If you had to meet the demands of the insurance company by devoting all these hours to administration, you couldn't do it. So let's imagine something else. Imagine if you owned a medical practice with all of the administrative challenges that are part of the insurance-based model, and you disconnected from that model. You attached to a different model, a method of health restoration that allowed your patients to get well. Let's go a step further. Suppose that outside of the insurance model, you could run a practice where patients paid cash. I told you today, Ken paid $1,200. I told you people pay as much as $6,500 for a 10-week program. Suppose you ran a medical practice with all this administrative burden that is due to meeting the demands of the insurance companies, and you said, I'm going to create a different model. I'm going to focus on getting people well, but I'm not going to deal with their insurance. And in fact, I will document outcomes on the patient's behalf. That can be done today. That's the world I work in. That can be done by you tomorrow. The exercise and eating intervention, the alignment with a medical office to bring in a fitness professional who is not only a personal trainer, but understands how to assess and reverse the markers of chronic disease, becomes a revenue stream. And if I go back to the graphic from the New England Journal of Medicine, everything that I outlined here, I'd have to check off as a yes. Patients, lower costs and better outcomes, yes. Providers, higher patient satisfaction rates and better care, yes. Payers, reduce risk, yes. Society, reduced healthcare spending and better overall, yes. Listen, I'm not asking you to change a flawed system, nor am I asking you to solve the healthcare crisis. I'm asking you to see the blue ocean and step into it before the sharks do. I'm asking you to step up onto a platform where you're willing to pursue whatever elements of your education are required to get the outcomes I'm presently seeing. In other words, don't be one of the trainers who I said they don't know what they don't know. If you don't understand enough right now, which is likely, and that's not an indoctrination of your education. I'm telling you, our field hasn't learned this. I stepped way outside of our educational circles to learn what I now know. It's worth pursuing a greater education in disease reversal for you to be able to operate in this blue ocean. If your ego says, no, I know everything I need, okay. But if you're willing to push that aside and go, you know, I do need to learn a little bit more. I want to step on this platform Phil's talking about. I want to pursue whatever elements of my education I have to get the outcomes that Phil is talking about. I want to be able to charge appropriately and have patients say, thank you, I no longer have the disease. I want to be justly rewarded for the good that I do. I'm simply asking you to consider if that's your purpose. I'm seeing the existing hole in the medical system. And I'm praying that it is filled by those who operate by a strong moral compass, centered, not a parasite. If this aligns with your calling, the only thing that can hold you back is fear. Now, it doesn't always show itself as fear. It may show up as a thought that says, I'm too busy to learn anything new. Or, everything Phil's saying sounds good, but I can't guarantee that even if I teach people, my clients will never do what I tell them to do. Just know, deep down, those voices in your head are the voices of two monsters, procrastination and negative talk, and both of them are fueled by fear. If what I'm saying resonates with you, and I promise you I have no hidden agenda here, and I'm saying this to the people in the Be Better group, but the guests as well. I would like to set up personal consultations, one-on-one, with those of you who are hearing this and feeling a sense of true opportunity. Some of you may be thinking, this is boring to me. I don't care about insurance. None of this is really important. Thankfully, I don't have diseases. I love training fit people. All of that's fine. But if you're hearing this and feeling any sense of true opportunity, if you're feeling something in your gut that feels like inspiration or an inner knowing that something powerful is about to take place, I'd like to set up a personal consultation with you without charge. I'm not trying to sell you anything. In that consultation, I want to help you assess your opportunities and your fears and get you over the obstacles that may prevent you from living the height of your purpose. If this is not fully resonating with you, if you feel like your purpose is working with athletes or fit people or building boot camps or developing new exercise strategies for the active market, that's all wonderful, and I mean that. There's no conflict. I just don't want you to set up a free consult with me. I only want to pursue the next step if you're feeling what I'm putting out. Now, and again, if you aren't, that's fine. I'm still glad you're here. We're still on a similar path, just not the same specific leg of it. I see a future in which there's room for you, but you may see another future completely. As I further grow within this space, I find myself being connected with more and more opportunists. And when I say that, I don't mean the parasitic ones. I mean the ones who want to come together to help people get well. So for me to treat this as a sideline would be wrong. So digest what I shared today, and feel free to reach out to me anytime if you feel that you want a one-on-one discussion. I don't want to sell or convince anyone. I only want those who are already convinced that this is a direction they want to arrange a private consult with me. I also encourage all of you, and I promise you this is not a sales pitch, but I really do encourage you to register for the 8-hour course, Profits, Power, and Permission, that I'm doing with the MedFit Network. It will serve as a really important educational piece, not only in terms of perspective, but also in terms of your practice. It starts March 5th, which is next Tuesday. It's delivered in 2 1-hour sessions each week for 4 weeks, total of 8 hours. And while beginning in April, that recorded course will be available to anyone for $497. Right now, you can register for $300 off, honestly. And it's live and it's interactive. That isn't a pitch. It's just an opportunity for the few of you who are guests here today if this entices you to go a next step. That's all I'm going to say about it. I want to conclude with direction, with clear direction, with a series of steps for you if you do in fact feel that this could be a new beginning for you. This is intended for the Be Better trainers, but I think anybody else will want to take notes. You want to write this down. It's a series of steps that require action. Every step, an action that you can move upon if you pursue them in order. If you just look at them all, they're going to intimidate you. But if you realize there's a hierarchy, there's an order, and you can do them one at a time, then any one of you can do this. What I'm laying out is a safe and secure method of securing your income and positioning your business so you can comfortably move into this space that I'm presenting without jeopardizing anything that you already have. Those of you who don't have a pen, I hope you're getting one. It's six steps. Each one of them is doable by every one of you. Now, procrastination, your emotional experiential memory, and negative talk might challenge everything I just said. But you know better than to give in to that. Before I share the six steps, does anybody have any thoughts, comments, or questions on anything I shared?
I was trying to talk before. There was a problem with the line, by the way, Phil.
Well, I'm glad you're talking now.
Yeah, that was
going on because I tried to unmute and couldn't either.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Were you able to hear me, though?
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah. Tony, you first.
I got up and got back on. No, I just want to let you know that. Really, if I don't really have any. That's all.
All right, Tasso.
So, Phil,
when you were back at the point of moments of recognition, and sort of like the synergy of what has occurred to us in the last 3 years in the Be Better Platinum Group.
Right.
So I reflected back, and from a very young age, I had these things that were, we'll call them nous in Greek. It's sort of like you knew it was within you, right? So there was a passion for the church, but it wasn't a passion that had a calling to the priesthood, right? I enjoyed working within the confines of the church. I enjoyed being in church and that. There was a desire to be in the conventional medical market from a very young age and doing pre-med studies because I wanted to be a healer. I wanted to help people. And there was this affinity for being an athlete I had, being competitive and wanting to coach people to those skills. And over the last 3 years in the development of the six-point plan in combination with the Synergy Triangle, the clarity for that has come to the extent of where, as we started in this whole discussion about getting into the medical profession, that the more it works, believe it or not, I find as much from the religious community, irregardless of denomination, supports and almost thinks they look at our facility now as something that has this balance between the physical, the spiritual, and the mental aspect of how we apply it, that third triangle of spirit, mindset, and cellular health are being manifested in what we're doing. So just like Andy has the biofeedback or the vibrational thing, we're finding that 5 years ago we'd have never talked about this because we thought they think we were nuts and doing LSD. But people, the recognition to that is becoming so much more mainstream that us working it into this system and then going back to what I've been working on from the standpoint of the direction of the last couple calls is the law of attraction for what's happening with the medical industry as well towards moving towards what we set down as a goal for me, right? So I just wanted to make that observation that this, my recognition is that with purpose, these developments from the original when I got in the Be Better Group, it was just a synergy triangle we talked about, and then we started to talk about the big triangle, and then we put the 6 points of health have really come together and manifested itself in that regard.
Yeah, and Tasso, that was a part. I mean, you were witness to my education and my refinement along the way. So
right. All
of that came out of the frustrations, believe it or not, of being a patient. Like, that's where that came from. So all of my fitness knowledge and education became only the cornerstone of what I was about to learn. So creating simplistic models like the big triangle and what I call the magic triangle, the 6-point secret, those became the new cornerstones. So I couldn't have gotten to this point where I'm sharing all of this with you had I not gone through that. And I'm glad that you've been along this journey with me. So clearly we're headed to a place that is about to break open. I mean, and I mean that in a very good way. Do you feel that?
I do, and I'm just finishing the thought of what you just started talking about. Phil, I remember you sharing us having an incident where you went into the hospital and you asked the nurse to step away because the perfume was making you sick because she didn't understand
right.
you as a patient and your space as a patient,
right.
but also your understanding.
That's right. Yeah, I remember that, and I needed to go through that for whatever reason. So, all of that led us to this place. So thank you for sharing that. I do understand I got a bunch of texts from you guys that you were having trouble unmuting. I see a few of you did. So I appreciate that you tried to participate. I'm glad that Tony and Tasso were able to. Anyone else want to share anything before I go on with the six steps?
Yeah, I got a comment.
Okay.
Because obviously I've been through the whole journey as well, and you know I've gotten myself to the point where I don't even take any clients that are for general fitness anymore. And I took one, but it's because he came from having to have a deeper experience than just general fitness, but he didn't have any chronic disease per se. But outside of that, I'm not even marketing to that community any longer. I mean, I am doing some post-rehab orthopedics, but I really just don't have that much of an interest in doing general fitness any longer at all.
Why, Tony? Because you've outgrown it?
What I think has happened, and the Slim Down has been a major, major revolution.
The Staten Island Slim Down, because I'm about to talk about the National Slim Down. So the Staten Island Slim Down, right?
Right, the Staten Island Slim Down.
Uh-huh.
Because when I first did it, it was really trying to piggyback off your statement on the radio and then also what was going on with the Biggest Loser. But I didn't realize when people showed up that they were really overweight and sick. And then the next year they came back more overweight and more sick. It was like a whole new set of people. And, you know, they were utilizing this whole, and unbeknownst to me, utilizing the whole strategy as a means to get well. On my dresser, I still have a guy who volunteers. He eventually came to be a trainer, but we met through the Slim Down. He's become a great friend of mine. And he had his prescription for the medication he was supposed to take from his doctor. And he told his doctor that he was going to be doing this 10-week program, and the doctor okayed for him to do the 10 weeks. And if he didn't resolve whatever it is he needed to resolve, that he was going to have to take the medication. So he framed it, because he never took it. He framed it and he gave it to me. And it's still on my desk. So with that being the alternative, it's just when people say I want to have great abs and great glutes, it just doesn't excite me anymore.
And do you feel, as I started bringing up at the beginning, that this is your purpose, that you've been kind of pushed along this path and now in front of you is a greater mission than you've ever really pursued?
Absolutely, without question.
Good.
You know, Phil, in the evolution of Tony, I remember the discussions, Tony, about monetizing the Biggest Loser, you know, the Slim Down, and the difficulty you had with that. But I get your emails because I constantly am enrolling in that, so I see what you're doing, and I see a change in the communication style where it really works from the standpoint of the direction we're following.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm also using it. You're right, and I'm also using it as a base because but approaching it in a way where I feel comfortable. But those people are there, and those people more so now. I've gotten inquiries that I want to sign up, but I want to sit down with you particularly because I have another condition that needs to be addressed, and it seems to me like every woman who's there is on Synthroid. Everyone is on diabetic medicine of some type. And I guess mm-hmm. until they confided in me with that, I mean, because it took them a while to be comfortable, I just didn't know that it was happening in such great numbers and in such great, percentages. I had no clue. But this
And that's why I laid this out today, because I want you to understand that's the only thing that could happen when people go to the conventional allopathic medical world for the solution. because I just laid it out. The 48-year-old becomes a very sick 68-year-old. That's what happens. That's exactly what happens because that's the way the system is set up. And far be it from me to try to change that system. I just feel like, man, what an opportunity. If we could help people who are going down the wrong path, then we got to stand in front of that path and wave our arms and go, wait a minute, don't go down that path. And yes, I'm going to ask you for money, but man, it's a lot less money than you're going to pay on that road. But the difference is I'm going to get you well. So, you know, there's a lot of mindset shift that has to take place for a personal trainer to open up to what I'm suggesting, because we were raised through our certification with the utmost respect for the doctor. We need to get medical clearance. You know, we need to check for contraindications. We still do, but now let's put things in perspective. The doctor in the conventional allopathic world is not equipped to get people well, and we can. So where is the greater value to the patient?
Well, let me ask you another question, too, because I've heard this on three or four separate occasions within the last week and a half, where someone has gotten a diagnosis and have been told by the medical professional that you're going to have to take this medicine for the rest of your life. Now, I said, listen, far be it from me to say hey or nay, but I'm starting to question it. I'm not saying I have the answers at all, but I'm just starting to say, listen, at least we could get to the point where we can open up a dialogue to say that that may not necessarily have to be the case, but it's happening pervasively.
Tony, in the days of Galileo, there were people who were called seers. Today we probably call them psychics. And they would see the future. Now, if somebody goes to a seer who can really see the future and says, you're going to need to be on this medication for life, and they truly have the ability to see the future, then they're probably right. I don't think that the physicians are seers. I don't. I think that certain words need to be inserted before that sentence. And here are the words. Unless you remedy the condition. Now try it. Try it with that preface. Unless you remedy the condition.
Yeah, unless you remedy the condition, you'll be forced to stay on this medication for the rest of your life.
That's a
very
truth.
Yeah.
That's a truth.
Right. Very different.
But the doctors haven't been taught to use that preface. And that's why there's opportunity here. If the doctors spoke that way, there wouldn't be the opportunity for us, honestly. But I'm telling you, we bring something to the doctor that they don't have. We bring them the ability to say that and, by the way, make money. Imagine that. Imagine if a doctor aligns with you, and now instead of saying you're going to need to be on this for life, they go, unless you remedy the condition, you're going to need to be on medication for life. By the way, Tony is going to help you remedy the condition. What percentage of those people are going to have interest in Tony?
I would say 100.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a real simple shift that we are capable of playing a major role in, not changing the system, but stepping into the space and making a massive difference in people's lives. All right, with that said, here are the six steps. Number one, plug up your holes. I don't mean physically. That would be uncomfortable. Have enough clients to meet your needs, charge what you're worth, and for everyone in the Be Better group, make sure you have enough clients and enough client income so you can add to your Ascension account every single week. So I don't want you to do anything else until you're secure in that, because I know that your core business is training clients. So I'm not asking you to make yourself so busy you can't do anything else. But before you start pursuing anything else, I don't want you to get distracted. Step one, have enough clients to meet your needs and add to your Ascension account. If you're not there right now, really, if you devote yourself to it, it won't take you more than 2 weeks. It means calling some old clients, asking for a few referrals, putting the word out, posting something on your social media. You can get new clients. Second, optimize a single profit center. I know some of you have four or five different profit centers that all drip in $100 a month. It's probably not worth it to juggle four or five for $100 a month if one of them could make you $600 a month. So assess that. Which of your profit centers can make you the money you're making from all of them combined? And give that one your focus. Because the idea is, let's free you up to get through the six steps. So I don't want you to ignore revenue. I just don't want you spread thin. So whether you have a product that you're selling or whether you're selling fitness cupcakes, whatever it is, that's bringing in a separate revenue stream, optimize the one. Whether it's as little as $400 a month or as much as $10,000, one profit center should get your focus. And it should be running on all cylinders. Now, ideally, this is something that your clients want to spend money on. It shouldn't be something else. You know, if your profit center is detailing cars and you're doing the work, I would say it's a conflict. But if your profit center is a product that your clients want to buy or a service that your clients want to take advantage of, it makes you very congruent. So optimize a single profit center. Once you've done that, you've brought your income up through making sure you have enough clients. You're putting money in your Ascension account, and you've optimized one profit center. So far, this is not hard. Number three, build a wall around your premium product. Tasso, personal training in your club costs how much per session?
Are you asking me that?
Yes.
Well, $55 a session for the trainers, for recurring appointment time, $95 for me.
Okay, so your premium product gets you $95, correct?
Right.
Now, if you were to sell the business and walk away, you could keep that $95 per session income, or probably more if you chose, right?
Right, yes.
So that's the idea for everyone here. Insulate yourself so you have a premium product that is separate from your core business and that can bring you some nice extra money. So financially, if you just follow those three steps, you're in really good shape. Number four, optimize two profit-driving affiliations. I know you all probably have at least 15 affiliations. There's a hair salon that you have a relationship with. They refer people to you. There's a restaurant that you send people to. I'm suggesting that you go through your whole list and you go, which are the two that could most plug into what I'm doing now? Which are, and they don't have to be medical, but they need to be referral sources or revenue shares or people who advertise on your blog or commission relationships or opportunities for you to write for a publication or to speak or to appear in someone else's forum, something that someone else is doing that you can affiliate with that can lead you to more business, more clients, more money.
Phil, how did you phrase
optimize
that?
Two. Go ahead.
Optimize two. Optimize two what? Referral sources?
They could be, but two affiliations that drive people to you, that drive money to you. Instead of having one finger and one toe in all these different places, have two. So in other words, if there's a restaurant or a store or a grocery store, a healthy food store that let you put your cards at their counter, then that may be one of the relationships, but I'm saying give yourself more to it. Maybe you'll show up once a week and do a talk for them. Maybe you'll do a grocery tour. So instead of having all of these affiliation relationships, choose two and maximize them. Number five, create a single marketing directive for everything you do online. So if you try boosting posts, if you're running Facebook ads, if you're doing things on Instagram, I see a lot of people have all these different options. Join my boot camp, do a consultation, come to my webinar, come to my event. All of these things are distractions. Unless they're making you a ton of money, one marketing directive. All that is just another pole in the water. So you shouldn't have to go back and reexamine it every week and go, what special am I going to run now? Create a single marketing directive for everything you do online. For example, a $150 consultation. So if you're responding to posts, people are asking you questions, how do I lose weight no matter what I do? I just got put on Synthroid. You answer their questions, but when they go, hey, can I do a consultation with you? Yes, $150. All right, I know, Troy, you do that. I know Jason Barron does that. All of you should have one single directive, so you don't try to negotiate. To go, well, what else could I do? Could I just come to your boot camp? So whatever it is, just make it the same thing for everyone. $150 consultation, a 20-minute Zoom call for $25, an orientation class for $20 a person, a seminar, a webinar. But I'm saying just one. The idea is an optimal funnel. It's too much energy to invest all of this time in social media trying to pull people in if you're getting onesies and twosies and trying different things with all of them. So if you do what I suggested, you're in a nice position for income. You're financially secure. You've got a full client base based on your ideal calendar. You're feeding your Ascension account. You've got some affiliations driving business to you. And then create and nurture a medical affiliation, not a little one, a big one. You guys understand what I'm saying about how you can make money for the doctor. This is not about you asking for referrals. This is about, in a sense, a partnership. I'm doing a big seminar March 13th, whatever the Wednesday is, with Dr. DeLuca in Palm Beach. After that, I'm going to turn my attention to building the National Slim Down with you guys. And I would like to start with a guinea pig promotion where we get 10 people that will be visible with their outcomes. So I'm planting that seed right now. And from that, we'll build the National Slim Down, which will become a part of what I said is number 5. It's online generating leads, and you'll be able to charge whatever it is that you do, but the same for everybody. The medical affiliation shouldn't just be another item on your list. It should be the big thing you focus on once everything else is in place. What should you be able to do? You should be able to get labs drawn. It's really important. Not in every case with every patient or client, but if you're going to evidence that you can reverse chronic disease, that's the evidence. So, Tony, you said it appears that all women are on Synthroid. If we add over 35, I would say you're about right. It seems 80% are on Armour Thyroid or Synthroid or Cytomel or some kind of thyroid medication. We know that those medications don't fix the condition. In the great majority of cases, we can likely teach them to reverse the condition. But we can't prove that unless we have labs. So you want to create a medical affiliation where you can ask people to go get labs and the doctor knows exactly what to do. So in my 2 offices, I just say, let's get labs drawn. Now, I don't have the ability to prescribe labs, but sitting right in the next office is the doctor who does. So when I say, let's get your labs drawn, within a minute, they're getting blood drawn. So form that kind of affiliation. It's within your scope of practice because you're not prescribing the labs. You're not diagnosing, but this is why you need the doctor. Also in this relationship, you should have a short-term program and documentation of outcomes. So that's exactly what I have. I have my 21-day metabolic reboot. This morning, Ken signed up for the 21-day metabolic reboot. He paid $1,200 plus $150 for the consult. 21 days from next week, he's beginning next week, we're going to run his labs again. We're going to see his outcome. In all likelihood, he's going to be thrilled. So that's what you need in the relationship. You need the ability to draw labs, and you need a doctor who sees the virtue in your short-term solution. Might you have a longer-term solution? Of course. But you don't want the doctor to have to sell somebody on training with you for 6 months. So if you're united on here's the first step, it's really easy. I run into zero cost resistance, zero. This is a beginning. It is the stepping up onto a different platform. This is an opportunity that you can embrace or you can reject or you can resist. It's entirely up to you. But I hope I've touched at least some of you to act forward, to acquire some new focus, to see how you can elevate in an industry that pulls you into complacency and mediocrity and acceptance if you let it. Before I wrap it up, does anybody have any thoughts, comments, or questions about anything at all? Star 6 to unmute, and if you can't, I apologize. It's out of my control. Let me see if I can unmute anybody. Let me see.
Hey, Phil, can we get an email about our consults with you?
What's that?
Can we get an email about our consult with you, or where do we book that?
just send me an email, phil@philkaplan.com. Just send me an email, say I want to set it up, and we'll go ahead and schedule it.
Okay, thank you. Thanks very much for today. It was excellent.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate you being here. What's that, Tasha?
Where do we go for the medical fitness seminar to register?
Man, I don't have the link off the top of my head, but I'll send it to you. You know, Tasso, everyone in the Be Better group, go nowhere. I'll give you free admission to that. Don't go register.
Okay.
You're already signed up. Okay. Anyone else? Thoughts, comments, questions? If you're desperately trying to unmute and it's not working, you can send me an email, phil@philkaplan.com. I will respond. I said earlier the world is changing. I can only hope to impact a small part of it, a bigger part if you guys align with me in this. Our discussion today is aimed at that, at having massive impact. And that's what I hope comes out of this. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm glad you're with me. Until we speak again, be better, everybody. Bye-bye.